Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Edgerunners miniatures game. Okay. So more cyberpunk. Enemy Within bundle. I got some good suggestions for that, how to use that. Lego D&D. We're getting a release on that set. Yeah. Coriolis, The Great Dark, is on Kickstarter. Okay. And we'll end with some sad news. Jim Ward has passed. So one of the originals for D&D. So yeah, it's gonna be tough. I don't know
who's left.
Yeah, who's left and who we're gonna have. who's gonna fill in? I don't know if we have anybody kind of in the mindset and the thinking of the originals. So that's a shame. So let's start with some cyberpunk. So we talked about Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone, I think they were calling it. And so that was just a generic, the Artosarian setting for a miniatures board game that was being done by those crazy cats at, what's the name of that company? Monster Fight Club, that's right.
Okay.
So Monster Fight Club is also who helped Warzone Eternal kind of get their miniature thing together. Okay. So they kind of do a chunky, it's a little bit retro and a little bit, you know, it takes advantage of the, you know, computer design and everything. So it has a little bit of a retro work. So I think it worked okay for, you know, Warzone Eternal. Yeah. And they do, you know, dynamic posing and stuff. So it works, you know, okay for characters. They lose a little bit with that distortion. They lose a little bit of their original look. But we're getting an Edgerunners version of that cyberpunk miniatures game. So based on the Netflix series. So it's going to be characters from that gang in the Netflix series, and basically they're opposing Arasaka. So it's going to be your choices are going to be the Edgerunners or the Corp, basically. Yeah. And so that's coming out I guess 2 years ago was when the
22.
When the they first introduced that series on Netflix. So that was Studio Trigger. So very classic anime. Did you ever watch that? Ever see that? Yeah. So it, you know, it's anime. So it's got all of that stuff. But there was some really good character moments, right? And they do that thing that I can't believe they haven't figured out in regular streaming shows, where if you're going to have these characters, and you want us to care about them, like give them an episode, a little bit of backstory. You can still move the whole narrative forward, but give a little spotlight episode to the individual characters, so we have some backstory and we know who the hell they are before you kill them or do whatever. Because that seems to be something really lacking in a lot of the series. They won't like take time because they're so worried about getting all their amazing plot in there and their amazing story arc for like 8 or 10 episodes. They won't take any time off, and Edgerunners does that, and like most anime does that in a really nice way, where you get focus on a character. Oh, now I care about them, and now we're going into the big climax at the end of the season. So that's something that they did well. So yes, this is going to be. So previously, they had done a Borderlands game that wasn't received particularly well. So Monster Fight Club, people were like, because it was just like endless spawning waves of enemies, kind of to create the feeling of the game. Mm-hmm. And people were just like, no thanks. But this is going to be they're using their reaction dice based system. So the reaction engine, which helps. There's kind of you can do something other than just get hit.
React?
Yeah. You can react. That's why it's called a reaction. So they're calling it a slick and stylish, fast and responsive gameplay. So combat and movement don't follow a turn structure. If you have actions, you can spend them. You can chain actions, and then but failing immediately passes over to your opponent.
Okay.
So you can spend all your stuff, and then they color code things green and red and yellow. So you roll dice that are more powerful. So, of course, custom dice. Mm-hmm. And then ability cards will match that. So you kind of have a sense. And you can, when you are damaged, it can degrade that color. So kind of instead of having just numbers, you can be looking like, oh, I'm all the way down to green or whatever the weaker one is. I'm all the way down to that. So you can visually see how damaged you are just by the cards that each of your characters is displaying. So yeah, this is, of course, Edgerunners fighting over Santo Domingo against the Arasaka Corp. And it's the characters, David, Lucina, Rebecca, and everybody in Maine's crew versus Adam Smasher. We get an Adam Smasher miniature, at least, and a bunch of faceless Arasaka goons. So 12 figure miniature teams. And the interesting thing that they're doing with this, because they are pretty heavy in doing miniatures, but maybe because of its anime, they're going to do a set where it's acrylic stands. So maybe the character art or something close to the character art from the animation acrylic stands, and then the premium version will be the 3D miniatures. So yeah, that was an interesting choice. And I think just because, I don't know, maybe that doesn't speak well to how well they reproduce these characters, the anime characters in 3D, but they're doing, yeah, acrylic standee versions or the 3D.
Well,
I don't know.
Whatever.
Yes.
Or I'm like, I don't know. Like, it could just be they're trying to appeal to more, like, board game people, where it's like, I don't really care about the miniatures, whatever.
Right.
The miniatures are a premium, where if you're like, oh, I really want the miniatures, right? Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking before, the thing, like, to boil it down, like, everything is just a fucking token.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And if that knocks down the price enough that it's going to get fans of the series to try it, where they wouldn't have if they're like, just gray plastic. So, yeah, it's an interesting approach, especially for a miniature company. It's a two-player starter box, 24 figures and cards, fold-out game board. So it's played on 22 by 30, so pretty tiny.
Okay.
Decks for loot gear, programs, and a bunch of dice. Oh, I guess enough dice for two players, so that's good. They don't short you on that. And we don't have a specific launch date, but later this year. So if you played the first version, the kind of generic version, and you like those mechanics and you like those characters, well, there you go. You're all set with I think there have been a couple of board games now based on Cyberpunk, like named characters in the video game, and then now there's named characters from the anime. So
a lot of overlap. I don't know. I kind of got feelings on, didn't watch the anime.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't. Mixed feelings in terms of like the whole like cyberpunk genre thing, where one player's corp, right? And I suppose, I mean, as a fan of like the Fantasy Flight Android Netrunner, I mean, like, you were corp in that too. So like the same comment I would make about this would be have to be the same comment I make about Netrunner, which is a game I really like, where okay, cyberpunk, but like, one side still has to be the cops.
Yeah, right.
yes, I don't know how punk is that, but then do you really want like punks versus punks? I mean, that's not.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and I think the vanilla version, that's what it was, is it was the named gangs in the setting. And so you're just playing, it was kind of like
punks versus
like turf battle, basically. Turf. And I think that's why they called it combat zone. Right. So we will see. But yes, and a bundle, a humble bundle, as a matter of fact, is coming out. And so this is the fourth edition Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay bundle. And I think they've already done that, but this is the Enemy Within. So this is everything they've released for the Enemy Within campaign, all five books, plus the kind of extra supplement that they're calling their director's cut. Yeah. So it's a lot of background notes and additional content. So it gives you kind of variations and a lot of advice about how to play this if they've already played it in first or second edition. So how to switch things up, because there's a lot of like key story points in the campaign where people are like, oh yeah, watch out for that guy, he's infected, or watch out for this guy, he's got chaos corruption, and you can switch, you know,
well,
they give you advice for kind of switching that around.
Interesting that they do that. And that's useful. What is it with gamers playing with assholes? Right? Like, wouldn't you be like, okay, we're playing the Enemy Within campaign. Oh, I've already played that before. Okay, well, either sit the fuck out.
Right.
Or don't ruin it for everyone else. I'm not going to say don't meta, because like that's come to be mean something else, right? Like, yeah. Or like, I would say like, no, meta game, right? Like, okay, so you know this person is infected, you know this person, whatever, right? Either find a reason for your character to like pretend that they don't know, just simply fuck up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just play your character. Yeah, no, that's
play your character true. Also has a problem. Like, oh, yeah. I'm doing it because my character would do it. Like, no, that's where you meta, right? I don't know. Like, it all boils down to like, don't play with an asshole, right?
Right. Yes. So that's hard to do when it's randos on online.
Yeah. Okay.
But, so yeah, this is one of the first and most famous campaigns for Warhammer Fantasy. And this is the current edition, fourth edition, that Cubicle 7 did. So the five-part epic, all the way from Altdorf to Middenheim. And all of this goes to benefit the Children's Health Ireland charity. So, and like I said, they'll give you the book for each of the parts, plus the director's cut volume, which has additional information and a lot of supporting things. So it also helps if you've got characters that kind of like to go off the path. They don't like to be railroaded. And they're like, what's in the forest? It helps you to kind of...
It wouldn't just be like, well, that plot keeps on ticking. So the more you explore in the forest, like, oh, you come back. Oh, everything's gone. It's all chaos. Yep. Yes. Good job, you.
So you've got that whole campaign, plus the supporting source books for the cities. So you have even more in-depth information about the cities that they're playing in, not just what's included in the campaign. Both the core book and the starter set. So if you want to give the players a taste of Worth Edition and have them go, ooh, this is crunchy, you can play with, you can give a try to the starter set. So all this, the digital versions of all of this. So included is Mindheim's City of the White Wolf, Altdorf, Crown of the Empire, and a total of 18 books. Ouch. So yeah, for all of that, for $25, the retail value of all that, all that PDF goodness is $288. They always have to do that. So you're like, what a savings.
Yeah, and you know what? It works.
Yes, it works. It does. Uh-huh. Yeah, so they also include things like the Buildings of Reichland, the Ubersreich Adventures, Old World Adventures, some of the like individual supplements and things that can be dropped in, as well as the Old World Beckons and the Empire in Ruins Companion. So that's what they're calling them, companions. So it's the adventure and the companion, which has like director's cut, you know, info in it. But we'll put a link to that, and that'll help support us if you decide to pick that up. But my advice for this, I'm not a huge fan of the fourth edition. But we played through the first, Shadow over Bogenhofen, the first part of the first part, Enemy in the Shadows, used the Warlock, 2-stat, rules light, old school, you know, British style rules, and it works perfectly. It was basically written to do that, I think, because there's too many things that just match one-to-one perfectly. You're like, oh, wow, no.
Yeah, I don't have to convert anything.
I'm not converting anything. So it's really well done, and I think there's probably a lot of experience. You can look at a lot of people that have either done this conversion or played this way if you want to get some advice about how to run it, but it works really well. It really feels intended to do that grim, dark fantasy with really rules light. And so you can just enjoy the story. You can go through a classic campaign and not have to worry about these newer rules that you're using or trying to get some older system, you know, people to enjoy. Right. Yeah, to enjoy some older system. So that would be my advice. So spend a little bit extra and pick up the PDF for Warlock, the latest edition of Warlock with an exclamation point. use that rule set. And so the character creation and everything works perfectly. It slots right into what you want to do. Yeah, because it's all skills, basically. Yeah, you're basically spelling out your character with their skills and not their stats. Right. But the luck mechanics and everything work great in that. So give that a shot, and it's just fun for the history of it as well. If you like the old world, you know, Warhammer Fantasy setting, there's a lot of great story in there, a lot of great characters and great story. So maybe inspiration for other campaigns. And finally, we're in the, we've been here for a while, the 50th anniversary. And we're getting more. Finally, we're getting more. So we saw a reveal of the Converse high tops, and they're terrible. It's like art from the old animation, like the, pre-production art of the, I think the characters that didn't even appear, but the toys, I guess the Mordred and the, some of the characters that they did for the toys the 80s, and then just the ampersand and all that good stuff. So just like three pairs of Converse that I don't think anybody's going to be that interested in. But the big reveal that people had been waiting for, and we've seen teased a lot because it was a competition. I think they did so this isn't officially designed by Lego. They did a competition of like who can do the best D&D Lego set, and so we're getting the official first release of this set. So what is it? It's the Lego Ideas 21-348 Dungeons & Dragons Red Dragon's Tail set is coming out. So part
How
of
do
the
they spell tail?
With a A-L-E. Oh, okay. Not the tail. And so this was designed by Lucas Bolt, known as Bolt Builds online, and part of the in collaboration with the Lego design team, they kind of like got it to make work perfectly. But his submission was found to be the most D&D-esque. So this is going to be a 3,700 Lego set. Okay. It's going to be a tavern with a removable roof and a tower with a Cinderhowl red dragon wrapped around it. And you're also going to get 6 Lego minifigs, of course, an orc rogue, a gnome fighter, a elf wizard, and a dwarf cleric, along with a beholder, owlbear, and displacer beast. So kind of, yeah, supporting what they featured in the movie, kind of. And if you order now, they'll throw in a free mimic. Yeah, so they're gonna give you the a free little
is the mimic just like dealio. A treasure chest with like a tooth insert?
Right. It's just one of those little things. Yeah, so they're trying to entice people to get into this. So if you've got a spare $360 laying around, feel free. Pre-order start March 31st at 9 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, so
that's a price tag.
And that is not even close. That's like a third of what some of these Star Wars sets cost. I've seen like $1,000 Star Wars.
But are those Star Wars ones like the official Lego? The Lego Ideas thing is official Lego as well. Right. Because I have the Lego Ideas like Seinfeld set I got from that friend. No disrespect to like the Lego Ideas, and I do like the thing about Lego Ideas. It's like okay. Fan sourced kind of things, and if they get a certain number of votes, right, then they kind of get turned into a Lego set, right? So no problem with that. I'm just kind of like D&D collaboration, okay,
right? Yes, and so to kind of sweeten this up a little bit, they're including a bespoke adventure that you can download for free or using your Lego points if you've got those. You can buy an actual printed version of this adventure that corresponds to this set. I guess probably you start in the tavern of the Lego set and you go to the tower of the Lego set.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a far walk. They're kind of really close together. Yes, but the Mimic is a free gift if you order now. The offer ends April 7th for all that, and probably while supplies last, as they usually do. A mini figure series will launch in September of this year, D&D themed, to keep celebrating the 50th. And so they're touting this set as a completely new and unique play experience because of this digital download. Yeah, 2,700 insider points if you've got that laying around.
I do not.
For the adventure. But it'll be a free digital download. And also D&D Beyond is going to support this adventure, so you'll have the character sheets and everything for this maybe Lego-y themed. Okay. But if that's not enough, going to be an actual play on April 6th of this at Lego House. I don't know wherever that is. So Anjali Vamani is going to be the DM and run a game with Louis Carrazzo, Ginny D, who's well embedded with Wizards of the Coast, as well as the fan designer Lucas and the official Lego designer Jordan Scott, to do a play of this adventure on a custom built Lego table. So they have like a red dragon like head piece and stuff on a Lego table. So they're really gonna go all in with this. And so a quote from Lucas, the designer, the Dungeons and Dragons theme combined with my love of history, fantasy, and making games inspired me to create a playable layout with different challenges and routes to explore. I had so much fun designing this piece, and it was a real privilege to see my design developed and into a detailed Lego set to celebrate the 50th. And of course, the Lego design manager said, Lucas is awesome. He's perfect. He's the best. And so they're really going all in with this. But still, I guess it's nice it's an adventure, but it's still generic D&D. It's like generic, you know, race class stuff. And
but that is D&D.
Yeah, right.
Like, that is D&D.
Yeah. But I was thinking, though. So I was thinking about this.
Okay. I'm listening.
Later. People that have a positive view of the Star Wars kind of prequel trilogy, okay, I think got a lot of that at a very young age, because there was a really weird collaboration that I remember hearing announced and thought, that's idiotic. They're Lego Star Wars video games.
Okay.
And they do these Lego Star Wars video games, and they're humorous. Yeah, yeah. And they're just like this action RPG where you're just bashing everything. There's no blood and guts. Everything just breaks down into bricks.
Lego. Yeah.
And you play with little kids. And I think if that was your first experience of the prequel trilogy, running around as, you know, Jedi and chopping everything up into little bricks, you have a really fond memory of this IP. And
as opposed to those of us who experienced the movie with like a dead-eyed Natalie Portman just like reciting stuff in the Senate, right?
Right, okay, yes, whatever. Yes. Right. Yeah, so it was a very different experience. And I don't know, I mean, they're looking for licensing, and you know, Wizards of the Coast is trying to do that. And I think if they did like classic adventures, named characters and things, Lego version with a little tongue-in-cheek sense of humor, that would be a really great introduction for people to think, oh yeah, D&D is a thing that I like from a very, very young age. Instead of this thing you have to kind of like, what is this? What do I do? I roll this. What do I do? So I think that's a missed opportunity. If this is their only collaboration with Lego, I think that's a really missed opportunity, because to have a little bit, to play around a little bit with the IP, to make it fun, and also then to make it an action video game that you're like, yeah, I like D&D. I like, you know, hitting goblins with my mace. That was so fun. And they just fall apart. And because little tiny kids, so this will be like a game that grandparents that played the tabletop game in the 70s could play with their grandchildren, because they both, you know, they both play video games. So it could be a really interesting kind of cross-generational thing, and really help with their branding instead of just generic nonsense. Like, have their name characters, their recognizable, like famous sites, even famous modules. You could basically lay out, you know, the video game levels like a module, like, you know, a abbreviated versions of the modules, and get people familiar with the names and places and things of these settings. So then when they release them, there's some at least recognition. So I think, you know, like Saturday morning cartoons and like the Lego games really help to bring people into IPs that they may not have been all that interested in otherwise.
I like that idea. The other idea I had was, as someone like who has a kid who does like the Lego Mario stuff.
Right? Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, I'm impressed with the little computer in the Lego Mario, right? Like the color recognition, the barcode reading thing. Like, develop something with that, with like an adventure game, yeah. Right? It would take a serious investment, but like, and the people would actually have to be pretty chunky.
Because
anyway, but like, back to like the D&D IP thing. Like, there are named characters, but the problem with D&D is that it's a game that kind of, it ostensibly wants you to tell your own stories, right? Therefore, it can't have too many like set plots and all this stuff, because what are you gonna do except like replay this thing again, right?
Right, right.
So I think that's where you have this problem of, we don't have these, apart from like places or iconic monsters or iconic spells or things that the players can interact with or use, we don't really have recognizable characters. Therefore, what do we get people to recognize to draw the name?
Yeah. I just, that seemed like a no-brainer, like putting those two things together, because, you know, fantasy action RPGs, and then if you made it a kiddie version, because when I first heard that they were doing that collaboration, because I was doing an animation test at WayForward Technologies, and the two heads of the company were talking in their office, and I'm like doing this, and I'm listening, and I'm like, what, Star Wars Lego video game? That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And they were kind of
popular.
They were scoffing at it too. And it just like took off. Like, it was because it was playful with the IP. You know, those are always humorous. But they include like details, like actual plot points and actual characters. So that seems like a real obvious thing to like make, you know, if they want people to have attraction to that, you know, setting or that idea. I mean, I guess you do, any generic fantasy will eventually lead you to Dungeons and Dragons. So yeah, it doesn't need to be. Oh, and speaking of which, a little addendum here. Did you hear that Larian Studios, the guys that did Baldur's Gate 3, said, yeah, no DLC and no more D&D. We're done.
Oh, really? I did not hear that.
So I guess that's what happens when you fire all of the people that were the liaisons with your... So that $90 million that they had to pay in royalties or, you know, licensing fees to Wizards of the Coast, I guess they were like, oh, we could have kept that. So, yeah, they're done doing other people's IPs, and I think they're going to go back to their Divinity setting. But, yeah, so they really screwed up because... Wizards of the Coast has already proven it in-house they can't make a decent video game. So they really need to work with some talent, and yeah, they killed that idea. So that's where my Lego thinking came from.
Only anecdotal evidence, but like, I'm not into video games all that much. But like, I've seen a couple of people say, like, playing Baldur's Gate reminded me how much I like D&D when I don't have to deal with all the mechanics, because the computer does it for me, right? And like, if if that's the kind of not like a knock against your system, like
right. And but it's also speaking like, oh, that's the, you know, that's the pre-painted miniatures of
tabletop.
Yeah, like get people in there, you know, on their VTT. Hmm. If like, you know, the VTT is going to do all the math. You just go D20, D20. But that may be the solution, is get people that are like, yeah, I want to do this, but all the roles and the
after a certain point, everybody's like, just why, right?
How many rounds of combat is this? How many times
have you been just thinking like,
Right. So, there's a lot of interesting things that they're not going to do. So congratulations, Wizards. You botched it. You Happy botched 50. It all. All right. So I'm working on the known universe of Dune, and we're setting this 75 years before the book.
So the blink of an eye in Herbert terms.
Yes, right. So nobody's been born yet, basically. We're dealing with everyone's grandfather. I have to like go through the wiki and be like, whose grandfather is still alive? So nobody's been born yet. But it's interesting because things haven't lined up to really, like, of course, Atreides and Harkonnen
don't like each other.
Yeah, they haven't liked each other for 10,000 years, because that came from the Battle of Carina. Like
that seems like a long time to hold a grudge.
Yes, it does. But they keep screwing each other over, so it's a very long held grudge. So that's kind of stood. But the kind of figuring out how all this stuff is connected, and then how the house that we built, a minor house, mind you, is going to interact with this, has been a lot of work. So I've needed a lot of energy, a lot of focus. I've been not abusing coffee like I used to, because spice. And not spice either. Yeah, I've had to deny myself the spice melange, but I have, in fact, found a solution for focus and energy. So this little bottle. So Magic Mind is something that, if you're interested in not the kind of crash, the peak and crash of a heavy caffeine use, but want a sustained caffeine release, this is something that might be worth trying. So the main problem is too much coffee. I end up very jittery and nervous, and coffee, it's very difficult from just coffee to get a sustained caffeine release. But green tea, matcha green tea, a Japanese secret that maybe the monks
we're doing that. Okay.
the monks have known for a long time, that has a much more sustained release, but it's not it doesn't quite do everything that you need it to. So the makers of Magic Mind have figured out kind of herbs and mushrooms that can supplement that alertness and mental focus to give you a shot, basically a mental focus shot that you can take in collaboration, in concert with your coffee or tea in the morning, and give you sustained focus and energy throughout the day. So just one of these a day can really help you kind of beat that kind of peak and crash that caffeine usually gives you. So, yeah, I've definitely needed as much to sustain focus as possible. The known universe is bigger than I thought. Imagine that. So, yes, and also things like abusing too much coffee and then doing that too late into the day will mess with your sleep. Right. So this is another way to make sure that you're going to not be caffeinated and you'll be able to get decent rest. You won't lose out on sleep because you've pushed yourself too hard. And the ingredients, of course, are all natural. There's no sugar, nut-free, vegan, keto, and paleo-friendly. Mm. So basically mushrooms, herbs, and green tea. And it's a good tasting shot. I'm surprised, because we're kind of used to things that are beneficial in Japan are they taste terrible. Yeah. And that's like the thinking in this part of the world. But luckily, the American-made Magic Mind makes things taste good. So if you keep it chilled, it's a really pleasant addition to your morning routine.
How long have you been taking them for now?
So it was the first thing was a 5-day trial, and basically I've been just doing it kind of a week at a time as I've needed it. And it basically, the thing that it's really benefited me in is getting my mornings back, because it was really hard without doing a lot of coffee in the morning to really be functional in the morning. And I was working late at night because I would, you know, have a little bit of coffee after dinner, and like, that's it. I'm up all night, and that became
Work.
Yeah, that became my productivity time. But then that cuts into your sleep. So this has been a decent way to do that. And if you'd like to try, I have a couple of different ways you can try it. They have they say at least 3 days is a good way to get a feel for what kind of effect it has. And they have a sampler pack of five bottles, so 5 days trial to really feel the full effect. And we have a link So if you, at the bottom of the screen, magicmind.com/upturned, and that's magicmind, magicmind.com/upturned, UPTURNED.
There's the focus.
There it is. And use the code UPTURNED20 to get 20% off any of the sample packs or any purchases. But if you want to try a subscription, which means they'll send you 30 bottles for your daily use, and then that just renews every month, you get 56% off. Yeah, okay. Your first subscription. So Upturn 20 will give you 20% off, but that turns into 56% if you actually want to try a subscription. Nice. As well. And there is a 100% money back guarantee, no questions asked, and refunds processed within 3 to 4 hours of requesting them. So so it's risk free. Give it a shot. Yes, give it a shot. Yes, exactly.
That's why you keep me here.
So the link will be in the description as well as at the bottom of the screen. So you can just click the link and enter the code, and that will let them know that also that you saw this ad. Yeah. So a mental performance shot, and their tagline is "Reclaim Your Brain." So get back your mornings and your mental focus. So thanks, Magic Mind, and. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. All right. So we've got a second addition to something. I was surprised that this was coming out. So Free League is doing a follow-up to their Coriolis. So The Great Dark. So a little bit different. And I haven't played the first version. So from the description, the first version, like everything established and kind of what you're doing sounds more interesting. But this is a new take where you're kind of going off into the Great Dark. Uh-huh. So more exploration. So The Great Dark is going to be dark, deep journeys. So God's Colony ships and more. So a Kickstarter, which funded in 7 minutes, of course.
Wow.
Jeez. Okay. Pretty soon it's going to be nanoseconds for some of these popular companies. So exploration in the dark, distant reaches of space. The portals are dead. The city ship is dying, but there is still hope. So a region of space filled with enigmatic ruins and dangers, and also the cataclysmic blight plays a role in this. So you're venturing out on these great ships to explore ruins and partake in the Byzantine schemes of powerful guilds. So that was the one thing that I was like, oh, okay, so exploration is interesting. What we're dealing with, guild politics? Oh, no. But so this is basically the frontier. Your characters are going to all have separate backgrounds and homes, but you're going to be based on this asteroid metropolis city ship. Mm-hmm. And from that point, you're either employed by the Explorers Guild. What is there? There's three kind of main guilds: the Navigators Guild, the Machinist Guild, and the Gardeners Guild, and the Explorers Guild, I guess, is the... So the three groups are needed for survival and take charge of this colony. So the machinists build the ship and keep the vast bowels of the asteroid in shape. The gardeners grow food and rejuvenate the atmosphere. And the navigators plan the expeditions into the cold space to look for resources. So, there's some clash between, and you'll ally yourself with one or the other. But I guess all three of them need to work for this this thing to... to function. Yeah, so this is so kind of shifting away from, what was it, the Third Horizon. So this is a different kind of region of space, and basically, you know, uncivilized, unconquered, and you're delving into these ancient civilizations. So from the Kickstarter, the portals are dead, the city ship is dying, but there's still hope. You are explorers of a dangerous world. You'll do the work few others will. The enigmatic ruins of the Great Dark is shunned by most, but not you. You seek them out to delve into the shadowy depths to uncover their secrets. The blight, the cataclysmic scourge that spreads from the ruins, makes others wary. For you, it's a beacon. Where there is blight, there are artifacts to find and mysteries to solve. So the city ship is dying, but you and your fellow explorers can find a way to a better future. So yes, kind of basically saving your civilization with old secrets, and so you will be off into the. So they're kind of doing similar thing that Free League has done with a few other releases. There's going to be a core book that's going to be the second edition rules and how to play in this kind of new setting, plus as a box set, like a starter box, and the starter box will give you a campaign to play along with, and of course. they can't resist, and they actually do a good job. Like a few other people, it's kind of a, it's kind of just that they wrap some fake leather around something and say, right, "Here you go."
Okay.
But but the limited edition books that Free League does are pretty nice. The one for Vesen, they actually matched the original source book of the illustration with the cloth wrapped, and
Wow,
so
okay,
they're identical design. So they match. They look, work well as a matched set. So they do nice. Nice additions, and of course they only do them for the crowdfunding mm-hmm. campaign. So they'll do a book, and then the campaign in the box set will be The Flowers of Algarab. So an epic campaign that answers the questions of the long-lost Ark ship Nidir. So two books, there's a campaign book and a expedition book, and then of course a bunch of handouts and maps. So a lot of things available, a separate large map of this setting. And the people involved, of course, the illustrations done by Martin Grip, so yep, some nice atmospheric illustrations. And who else are we talking about here? Kostas Kostoulis and Niels Carlin, who worked on the original Coriolis. And then Tomas Herrenstam is doing the rules. And so we're getting a nice team doing what they do best. There'll also be a DM screen, and of course you can get extra copies of the book, and of course there's custom dice. Never fear.
I've been somewhat interested in Coriolis Third Horizon. Like, I wonder if there's going to be like a sale on this once. I fell out of my head what this Coriolis is.
Oh, The Great Dark?
The Great Dark, yeah. Dairy King. Mm-hmm. And like, I wonder if this is like a second... It's probably a second edition in the sense that they clean stuff up, because Coriolis the Third Horizon has been out for
a while. Right,
I want
right.
to say like 5 years, but who knows. But I would be curious about what mechanically is different mm-hmm. between these two things. And I have to assume that this uses their, Year Zero engine.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when they say custom dice, it's probably like the blank D6s in one color for your base dice, then another one for whatever kind of gear or stress
right.
or skills that go on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the custom dice here, because it's easy enough to just play with normal D6s.
Yes, yeah, they don't make that difficult at all. It's not too, it's usually just a 1-6 result, and they just give you like nice symbols so you instantly recognize
yeah.
Success and failure.
Whether you've succeeded or horribly messed up.
Right, yeah. right. Yes. So a couple of other things that it's nice they're adding to this campaign. They're going to do an alchemy VTT module, which are beautiful, atmospheric. So it's alchemy is nice because you can have a kind of theater of the mind, just very atmospheric image to evoke the location or the setting with a little bit of animation and sound. And you can also then switch over to a battle map. So if you're going to play something more strategic, it's nice to switch between the two, but you can literally play all Theater of the Mind just with these nice atmospheres of that they crafted with the art from the books, and then a little additional flourishes and animation. And then they're doing an open license for third-party content modules. Yeah, so you can create and sell any module you like, no royalties, as long as it requires the core game to use. It requires their core game to use. You're not like modifying it. So you get a logo to mark compatibility.
So I have to think that means like you would have to include stuff like, to resolve this mechanic, basically see the Coriolis.
Yeah, right. Right.
Dark, but right. Yes, like yes. You can't, well, I mean, it would be copyright infringement anyway. Like, you couldn't replicate word for word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not included. Yeah. It'll require their book to play your module. Yes. Yes.
So basically it's like, extra rules that you come up with on top of that.
Yeah, right.
Or just there's kind of like no rules. Just like, here's the adventure. Here's the thing you're doing. Use the Great Dark to resolve everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're right. The year six, so you're rolling D6s, multiple successes, trigger bonus effects. Any result of a six is a success. Mm-hmm. And there's also a hope mechanic, which, kind of you can use to...
Aliens stress mechanic?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. The opposite. It's a hopeful game. But there's kind of I haven't played the original version, but I remember there's kind of like you can pray for something, basically. Mm-hmm. Like there's a spirituality to the game that gives it a much different tone from other kind of like dark sci-fi. So quick character generation, combat, shuttles and trekkers, exploration, and expeditions are all included in the rules. So yeah, they're doing a limited edition alchemy module, and pretty decent if you just want to get in. The digital edition is only $24, so that's a PDF of the core rules. If you want the core rules in the campaign set, that's $44, and then standard edition, $49. This is all U.S. Right. dollars. Collector's edition, $87. Wow, we're getting up there. And then the combos go up from there. Right. So, yeah, basically the all-in pledge is $155. That gives you basic version of – or I guess the collector's – no, that's the collector's version of the book. And then everything, the GM screen, the dice, the maps, and everything, plus PDFs of all that.
Right. Well, it's still not a Lego D&D set.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Still cheaper. Half still the cheaper price of Lego D&D.
Although,
so think about that. Yeah.
Okay, the appeal of Lego sets is they can be anything you want, right?
That's true. Yeah, so you could do your own Coriolis Lego set.
There you go, right? There's the tie-in that I was looking for, right? So.
Build it out in Lego. You don't even need the VTT.
Right. So before you continue, I think I might have to go.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, so great.
I'm leaving you here by yourself.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. Let's stick with your schedule. So where can people find you?
On any of the decent social medias. Right? There's only two. Right? That is Instagram and Blue Sky. That's Hive Mind, HYVEMYND, where I don't even know what I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
We'll
check in and find out what
that's a good way to put it.
Chris talking about today. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So yeah, so thanks so much for joining us. I got one more thing that I want to cover. And thanks, Chris. We'll hopefully see you next week.
Yeah.
Let's do this again.
Yes, next week. Cool.
Okay.
Oh, I gotta awkwardly scoot my chair away.
scoot. Yeah, so I saved this for last because it was difficult to talk about anything after this. But the last thing I wanted to cover is the passing of Jim Ward. So unfortunately, we heard the news that at age 72, James M. Ward has passed. He was a friend of Gary Gygax, one of the original players in the Greyhawk game, early TSR employee. And he was made canon in D&D as Drawmidge, which is Jim Ward backwards, his wizard character. And so Drawmidge's instant summons and Drawmidge's marvelous shield are two things that have immortalized him in the rules. So he was also co-author to early supplements of the God, Demigods, and Heroes, and worked out a lot of pantheons for known the Cthulhu mythos, Moorcock's Elric. Pantheon. But interestingly enough, that all vanished from D&D, and you would think it was because D&D was afraid of copyright infringement, but those were the days before copyright, before people sued everybody all the time. And it was just that TSR had decided they don't want to reference what could be the competition, because there was starting to be more and more official games for those settings. So D&D didn't want to include the competition's characters. And maybe the thing that you may know him best for, or one of his great accomplishments, was Metamorphosis Alpha. So TSR's kind of first sci-fi game, which kind of led the way for Gamma World. So the interesting thing about Metamorphosis Alpha was it was set on a generation ship, like a massive generation ship that had some sort of cosmic cataclysmic event that basically left the survivors growing up on the ship thinking this was the world that they were born into. This world of mutated creatures, unfathomable technology, and completely. I think there was a few books at the time that inspired this, as a few stories and maybe short stories from more pulp sci-fi that have this idea, but it's a great idea for a an RPG setting. And so beyond TSR, he also worked on a lot of collectible card games and even with Troll Lord games. And so that was 20 years at TSR. In 1989, he was inducted into the Academy of Adventure Gaming Arts and Design Hall of Fame. So yeah, it's really sad to see a lot of these original designers and actors, because he was not young but not old. I mean, there was still more in him, because of course we knew at the end, he was working with the ill-fated. So I was co-author of Giantlands and got associated with the ill-fated kind of wonder-filled group, the TSR offshoot that we've talked about many times. So unfortunately, that was kind of the last thing that he was connected to. But he did he was writing for the Gygax magazine in 2013 and did create a final adventure for Metamorphosis Alpha. So they all died at the International Space Station, was the last adventure that he wrote for Metamorphosis Alpha. And there's some great video if you want to kind of have a fond remembrance of some great video of him running some Metamorphosis Alpha sessions and things on Facebook. So just give a search on either Facebook and Facebook and Twitter. There's some, and a lot of people have had some nice messages and talked, said some great things in remembrance. So yeah, I didn't want to go into anything else after this, so I figured this is a good time to leave on a kind of a sad note. But that's very sad to hear. So Jim Ward has passed. So that's going to do it for this week. So Chris had to get out of here sooner, and we'll try to get our schedule done a little bit better next time. I think the schedule's a little tight this week, but I'm still doing my Abuse Cartoons, if you want to check that out. So Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch, and abusecartoons.com is the website, and you can read the cartoon on GoComics. So gocomics.com/domesticabuse is 20 years of the archive of that silly thing. And if you'd like to support what we're doing here on the weekly, consider becoming a weakling. Oh, Chris isn't here. But basically tell us that you want to see what you want to see more of on the weekly, the kinds of topics and things you'd like to see discussed. And of course, there's other tiers on our Patreon. So you can do that at patreon.com/upturntable and basically let us know what kind of content, if you're enjoy the actual plays, unboxings, kind of reviews. We haven't done direct deep dive reviews. We've been actually enjoying more playing games than just reviewing them recently, but let us know anything that sounds good for content for the channel, and just have a direct connection with us, and we can talk about what is next. So thank you for joining us. We'll be back again next week, and see you then. Goodbye.